We're going to get started. We're one away from a quorum. I want to thank the members for coming. It's always tough to show up on a Friday afternoon, particularly when a number of our members live at a great distance in the Twin Cities. But it's only for a short period of time during the year that we're required to do this. So, members, in your packet, you'll find a copy of the report that was submitted this year by the task force to compare federal and state special ed requirements. That was authorized in the 2007 Omnibus Education Bill. I want to encourage you to look through that. We are trying to arrange for an opportunity yet this session to hear from the task force itself. There are several bills that have been introduced and or I've heard will be introduced related to this issue. I don't know the particulars of the bills yet, but I think at least one, maybe two of those bills are going to try to carry forward some of the recommendations that come out of that task force. And so our hope is to at least provide some kind of a background information for members prior to hearing those bills. Of course, the time is really tight. We had hoped to have heard from the task force last Thursday, but we wound up in a long fourth session dealing with a very important bill, and so we were not able to do that. So hang on to your seats, because I think things are going to move pretty quickly and pretty intensely over the course of the next 2 weeks in this committee as we rush to try to meet our policy deadline. And I hope that we can give a decent amount of time to the task force to share its information with us. So please take that for your weekend reading in between your conventions this weekend. I'm told we're not going to do the minutes today. They're in your packet, but I think we've got some corrections that we're still working on. So we'll circle back to those the next time we meet. Today we've got four bills.
Yep.
Four bills. We've got two bills related to the P-15 or P-20 council. We've got an alternative school start bill offered by Representative Brainerd, and then we have a Representative Benson bill that touches on that issue, but also primarily deals with some reporting requirements that a number of our school constituents have some concerns about. And so it is my goal to try to get through all those bills and to try to do so quickly. We are, I think, still one away from a quorum, so we can't officially move anything until we can have another member show up. But we'll start with the testimony on House File 2625. And House File 2783, and actually I believe we're going to move the 2783 bill. These bills are very similar. The 2783 is the Swales, Representative Swales bill. Representative Slocum has the 2625. But I believe our intention is to move the first bill here, but hear from both of these authors at this time. So Representative Swales, would you care to move your bill? And my understanding is we're going to move your bill to finance at this point with a recommendation that they go on to K-12 finance. But it's quite possible that we might at the next step, if we work it out with those committee chairs, possibly move that bill to the floor. So we can't officially move anything yet, but why don't you begin talking about your respective bills and what the intent is and how they're structured, and hopefully we'll have a quorum here soon.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and committee members. This afternoon, Representative Slocum and I are going to be presenting information about the P-16 or P-20 bills, and at this point in time, I think we're both wanting to merge these two bills. I think they're very similar in intent, and mine has a little bit more detail, but certainly Representative Slocum and I are trying to provide a little bit more involvement of the legislative arm into the discussions in that committee. It kind of started out for me, where I really first became aware of P16 activities. It was not in Minnesota, actually. Last April, Representative Greiling, Representative McFarland, and I were invited to a National Council of State Legislators fact-finding trip to Austin, Texas, where we were looking at high school redesign initiatives that are going on. And Texas has something that deeply impressed me when I started talking with their elected officials and listening to what is going on. Texas has a very well integrated P16 commission into the overall educational focus for their state. It consists of members from higher ed, from K-12, from early education, and most importantly, I think they've included the business partnership so that these people have a say in what is going on in preparing students for the future. I had some handouts passed out to you from the Texas Education Agency, and this one, the first one that's a one-page handout, it says the P16 bridge, the road to academic and post-secondary success. And you can see that they have included here what the purpose of P16 education is. So P16 describes an integrated system of education stretching from preschool, the P, to a four-year degree, grade 16. It is designed to improve student achievement by getting children off to a good start, academic standards, conducting appropriate assessments, improving teacher quality, and generally smoothing student transitions from one level of learning to the next. It also focuses on helping all children meet the proficiency levels needed to succeed at the next education level and in the workforce. So that, I think, is very similar to what the purpose of our P16 commission has been here in Minnesota. But what I really appreciate about Texas is that they have included the stakeholders at the table that are also those who are policymakers. The second handout that I gave to you from Texas not only shows the membership of their P16 council, which is on the first page in the first paragraph, it also includes representatives from the legislature, which I think is important. And then the next two pages 2 through 4 actually show their agenda times and then their presentations that are discussed in each of their sessions. For instance, Thursday, March 29th, the year 2007, they talked about educator quality, college readiness, uniform GPA, student web portal, and so forth. So you can see that with every meeting, there is not only, you can see what's going to happen at the upcoming meetings, but then you get a full report of the discussion that happened in those meetings. The reason that I am bringing this bill forward is because, at present, we do not have members of the legislature at the table. And I think it's important that the chairs of both the Education Policy and Education Finance Committee, the chairs of those two committees are present. Now, Mr. Chair, I am about to provide you a parliamentary opportunity. That's how we talk about learning opportunities, and so we're going to see how good your skills are right now.
Before you do that, Representative Swales, let me officially call this committee to order. We do have a quorum, and also this would be an opportune time for you to formally move your bill.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. At this time, I would like to formally move House File 2783.
Representative Swales moves that House File 2783 be recommended to pass and refer to Finance Committee with a recommendation that it be re-referred to K-12 Finance.
All right. Here comes your parliament.
Here comes my parliament.
All right. We'll vote you off the island if you don't get this. There are three amendments in your package. And the first one has to do with early childhood education, and already in the bill it states one member of an organization that, on line 24, Representative Slawik, I don't really know what your amendment is doing here, so maybe you better explain.
Mr. Chair.
Representative Slawik.
Mr. Chair, Representative Sales, mine is actually A2, but it actually is incorporated in A1, so I would say that would eliminate one amendment right there. If what it does is on page 2, line 14, well, first of all, it deletes the word public. So it's right now it says private or public early childhood providers. So it's crossing out or public and then adding and one member of an organization that represents public early childhood providers. So in essence, you would have a private early childhood provider and a public early childhood provider.
All right. So, Mr. Chair, I would like to suggest that maybe we just move on that amendment from Representative Slawik first, and then...
Representative Slawik, would you care to move your amendment?
Mr. Chair, mine is actually, I move H2783A2.
Representative Slawik moves the A2 amendment. Representative Slawik?
Members, Representative Swales, you heard the reason for that. We have looked at this bill. We think it's a really good bill. Right now, Ready for K does work with the P16 Council, but we know that there's big differences between private and public early childhood providers, so we'd like to see one of each on there. Thank you.
Representative Swell?
That's an acceptable amendment to me, Mr. Chair.
And let me just comment, because I'm familiar with the P16 Council, having participated in it not as a legislator, but as a director of the nonprofit education community. So I am familiar with them, and they in fact do currently have early childhood presence on the existing structure. And all that by way of saying that I don't think that Representative Swalwick's amendment here attempts to do anything other than what's already represented in the current voluntary structure. And so I fear that Representative Slayers, you can have 20 amendments of all sorts of folks wanting to be added here, but I think the principle here at this point is that you're reflecting what is currently informally there, and I think Representative Slawik's amendment reflects that intention. Is there any further discussion of Representative Slawik's amendment and the H2 amendment? If not, all in favor, please say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, same sign. Motion prevails. Representative Swale.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Another amendment, this would be H2783A3. This particular amendment, on page 2, line 14, after the semicolon, please insert 25, one member from the Minnesota Education Media Organization, 26, one member from the Minnesota Library Association. Page 2, line 15, delete 25 and insert 27.
Representative Swales, you're moving the A3 amendment. Representative Swales moves the A3 amendment. Discussion? Representative Peterson?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. A question from Ms. Swales. These two organizations, does that begin to expand the organization to the point where every subgroup that's out there, whether it's a science organization or the social studies or all the rest of the organizations, are going to want a place at the table?
Representative Peterson and Mr. Chair, I do believe that that's the direction this is beginning to look with these amendments, yes.
Representative Peterson.
Mr. Chair, I would have a little difficulty supporting this amendment.
So, Peterson, I share your difficulty with it, and I know that the amendment is not offered in any negative way, but I think there is an issue here in terms of the possibility of opening up the door here for an endless stream of, it's not atypical to have legislation that would empower an existing group to add members as it sees fit, which then puts the decision back into the group, and that might be a good compromise if and when the bill moves forward. Mm-hmm. Any further discussion on the A3 amendment? If not, all in favor, please say aye. Opposed, same sign.
No.
Aye.
No.
Motion does not prevail. That's very clear.
I have another one. This is an oral amendment.
Okay. I've got the oral amendment.
I have another one on this.
Oh, you have one too? I thought this was it. Sorry.
This is the list of people wanting to be on the team.
But the same scale. You're giving them due time.
I'm trying to.
You're getting up in front of that way. That's good.
All right.
Chairman. Episode local.
And members, the oral amendment would be line 217. And where it says organization, period, we would eliminate the period and put or the chief executive's designee. So the line would read, partnership members must be the chief executive of their respective organizations or the chief executive's designee.
Representative Slocum moved the oral amendment on line 217 to add after the word organizations or the chief executive's designee, period. Any further discussion on the motion? If not, all in favor of the motion, please say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, same sign. Motion prevails.
All right. The last and final organization that would like to be added to the list, and I am a staunch supporter of the Perfect Center for Arts Education, and they were hoping that they might have a seat at the table as well. So I would move that.
And is that an amendment before us?
No, it's not. It's an oral amendment.
Okay. So can you direct us where that's, and if you want, you can have staff help you with that.
I think, you know, if for instance, after we say, one member from the Mentoring Partnership of Minnesota, so that would be number 24, number 25, add one member from the Perfect Center for Arts Education, and then reorder the numbers after that.
Let's see if I can describe it. The first 12 would move on line 215 after the number 25 to add
one member at the Perfect Center for Arts Education.
Of the Perfect Center for Arts Education.
And then renumber the following numbers so that it will numerically be correct.
Okay. Are we clear on that number? Okay. Discussion? Let's proceed, sir.
I guess I'm the one to question these today, but having had done some work on this initially, is there any other organization that would be covered under... The Perfect Center would be covered under any of these other organizations. Most of these, whether it's I would assume the principals, the school boards, Education Minnesota. It seems to me that there's a number of other organizations that would and could represent them, and I'm concerned again about just one particular entity being included. So maybe you can give me some arguments about why that one should be included over any of the others.
Episode 12.
On behalf of the Perfect Center, it is a unique school in our state bevy of school organizations. They do offer a unique perspective. So I think that is why they want to be at the table.
Representative Peter said arguably the Commissioner of Education would be able to represent any number of K-12 educational institutions, but certainly Representative Swales' point about the unique nature and history of that school is correct. I do, however, join, would just repeat my previous comments in regards to, creating a very large list here that may have no end. So I would not support the amendment at this time. Any further discussion? If not, all in favor of the motion, please say aye.
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 Opposed, same sign. No. Motion does not prevail. Representative Swale.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I am so sorry that we did get distracted by the list of organizations that would like to be part of this. I think the main thrust of the intent from both Representative Slocum and myself is that we would like to have those who are policymakers to be present at the table when decisions are discussed related to the future of education in Minnesota. I am very honored to be part of Representative Dietrich's High School Redesign Subcommittee. And on that subcommittee, this has been the very focus of engaging the stakeholders in across Minnesota in looking at how we can prepare a better workforce and to provide the kind of relevant education that the 21st century is going to demand. And so with that said, I would urge the committee to consider adding the legislative voice at the table. And I renew my motion that this be accepted.
Representative Swales, at this point, however, I do want to see if anyone in the audience wishes to testify for or against the bill. Is there anyone in the audience that wishes to comment on the bill? Apparently not. Representative Welty.
Thank you, Chair Mariani. And to Representative Swales, my question is, and maybe you already answered this, but could you tell me, out of the list of 1 through 25, which of those are brand new to the T16? Which ones are you adding?
Mr. Chair and Representative Welty, it would be line 116. It is the chairs of the House and Senate committees having line 114, the chairs of the House and Senate committees having jurisdiction over pre-kindergarten through grade 12 education policy. And then also the chair of the House and Senate committees having jurisdiction over higher ed policy. I don't believe those chairs are at the table either.
And that was the sum of substance, I believe, Representative Slocum's initiative was to seek legislative participation formally in the P16 or P20 council, and part of that was, you know, to reflect models that exist in other states. Representative Welty?
Thank you, Chair Mariani, and I guess just to follow up with that, so I just want to be clear, there currently on P16, there's a member from the Citizens League, there's a member from the Minnesota Council of Foundations, there's a member from the Minnesota Minority Education Partnership, there's a member from the PTA. I just want to be clear on that.
Yes.
Representative
Mariani and Representative Welty, you are correct.
Representative Rudolph.
Thank you, Ms. Chairman. I just feel obligated today with Representative Erickson's absence to ask this question. If these stakeholders are interested, couldn't you create the task force without legislation?
Representative Wales.
Representative Erdahl, thank you so much for that question. I really don't know the answer to that question. Perhaps someone from the department or Commissioner Segrin would know the answer to that. But at this time, legislators are not invited to the table.
Representative Rhoda, I am humorously reminded that the same question was directed at you the other day, and so you.
I was going to give the answer.
I appreciate your courtesy. So please give us the answer. Yes, you have a very good answer, quite honestly.
Just bringing more people together to collaborate is always a good thing.
I like that answer.
Not often that you ask the question and give the answer at the same time.
I think, in my opinion, members, humble as it is, I think that, by codifying the existence of this creature, it does set up certain expectations on the part of the legislature for the work to be done, and some line of reporting and sharing of policy. I don't think that does not happen currently, but I think that it certainly makes that sort of expectation that much more clear between the legislature and this body. And so perhaps the question in many ways is whether or not this body wishes to have that level of expectation and relationship with this group of organizations. Representative Stallworth.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And to Representative Swales, I think we were both at the P16 meeting with Bob Brunex and Commissioner Segrin and so forth, and this question came up, and they actually sort of debated in front of us about whether legislators should serve on this kind of a committee based on our schedules and how busy we were. I almost was going to ask the same sort of questions of whether we really need to legislate this, but it appeared, I just wanted to ask your opinion on this, that they really did not have a favorable opinion of legislators being on this group.
Representative Swell.
Chair Mariani and Representative Swalick, I don't want to speak for them. That would be totally inappropriate, too. But my feeling is that there was some concern about a legislative presence. I don't know if that would be because of the partisan nature of our job, but I would like to think that when we are trying to improve the overall preparation of a future workforce, that all of us would be able to work together and bring whatever our perspectives are in order to make that happen. So,
my point would be, I also wondered if we need legislation, but after having gone through a conversation where, you know, it's almost when you get cut out of something, you want to be a part of it even more, you know, or when they're not that interested. So, you know, I can see the merits of both sides and why you're doing this. So, thanks for bringing it forward.
Representative Peterson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I think when the council was originally put together, it was just a collaborative group outside the legislature, but I have heard concerns from legislators about why we're not represented, and it seems to me over the years, I'm not sure how many years this has been in existence, 10 or 12, I think Ms. Chris could probably...
5 years.
Only five? Oh, wow. So it seems like a longer... And it seems to me it has evolved to a point. I mean, this whole concept of a seamless system, and now it's even early childhood to higher ed and the workforce development, and that continuity or alignment of standards and expectations would warrant at least having, you know, four legislators or legislators on there to understand what's going on and probably be an advocate for what they're doing. So I would be supportive of having somebody on there at this point in time.
So Peter, I think you make some very good points, and in many ways the council, I think, was fast emerging and evolving thinking in our state and frankly across the country about the importance of much deeper and tighter coordination and sharing across the different silos that we currently have, institutionally structured in education. I know, for example, one of the issues that I'm actually carrying a bill this year is the student identifier bill that would allow us to be able to track Minnesota students from our K-12 system into post-secondary. And some of the benefits of that would include the ability to make a relationship, some kind of research-based, evidence-based relationship between course-taking in K-12 as it relates to course-taking in post-secondary and, you know, whether success rates of post-secondary experiences can be attributed to K-12 experiences. And that comes out of the work of that council. I know Ms. Crisp has been working particularly on that issue for a number of years. So I think there is a reflection of an evolving nature of policy here. Representative Walter, and then Representative Swales, we're going to move for a vote on your bill.
Thank you, Chair Mariani, and I just want to clarify that we will be voting on both of the bills that are before us, Representative Swales' bill number 2783 and then Representative Welcome's bill number 2625.
Representative Walter, no, we will be voting on House File 2783 and House File 2625 will not be taken up today.
Okay. Well, then I have...
Representative
Mr. Chair, I like the language that Representative Slocum has in 2625 because we are talking about a balance between the minority party and the majority party, and I really believe that we need representatives. We need consistency, especially if, you know, in an election cycle we have a major transition. It would be nice to have some consistency between... the years and who's serving on the P16 2016. So if it is possible in the future as you move forward to insert Representative Slocum's language into your bill, if you're willing to do that.
Representative Quayle.
Chair Mariani and Representative Welty, I like that language as well. Those were some of the very thoughts that I had in terms of, you know, when we talk about having a presence of it being highly partisan at times, and so this would have a balance to that conversation. But it's up to the body here if we would make this another amendment to insert that in the lines related to the legislators. It does add two more or three more individuals to the table.
With the first round, the chair is certainly willing to lay over the bill if you want to work out language. I actually do like the issue that Representative Welty raises here. We can move on with another bill and then perhaps circle back. If that's your desire now, we can also certainly encourage you as you move the bill forward to make that change.
Well, I believe that it would probably be more efficient, Mr. Chair, with all due respect, that we go ahead and vote on the bill as it is now, with my personal guarantee to Representative Welty that I will work with counsel in making this appropriate for the next committee.
Representative Welty, is that acceptable to you?
Yes, Mr. Chair, that is.
All right. Members, then we're ready for a vote. With Chris Wales, removes her motion that House File 2783 as amended. She recommended to pass and refer to Finance Committee, and our intention is that be re-referred to the K-12 Finance Committee. All in favor of that motion, please say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, same sign. Motion prevails. Thank you, Chris Wales and Representative Joko. You guys are an awesome team. You do this more often. Public school teachers, there you go. Team teaching. Representative Brainerd, House File 3262. The chair will move that House File 3262 be recommended to pass. And let's see. Oh, yeah. Representative Brainerd, Representative Rukavina has asked for your bill. I think you're aware of that. It is the intention of this chair to respect the requests of other chairs for their bills. It pains me, however, to stick to that principle, because I suspect that your bill will probably face a horrific outcome in that committee, and we'll certainly appeal to Representative Rukavina in this regard. But however, I do want to honor a fellow chair's request to see bills. I certainly have asked for bills myself and would expect that as well. So the motion is to recommend the pass and to be referred to the Committee on Higher Education and Workforce Development Policy. Representative Biden.
Thank you, Chair Mariani, and committee members. This is the second time I've appeared before you this week, and I'd say the reading is a little bit lighter this time and more can be absorbed more quickly, but maybe not less provocative. since the chair has mentioned, Representative Rukavina has asked for my bill, and it. I'm trying to strategize about that. I may bring my superintendent with me to protect my interests, but we'll see. But any of you who have been connected to education could make the arguments without any help from me. You recognize the bill. This is what I consider to be a very modest proposal in this arena, and Representative Benson has actually the more encompassing solution to this dilemma.
Thank you for telling me that.
Well, I hope they did. No. I'll just try to do a brief summary of some of these issues, but the general essential issue is local control. This bill only addresses two calendar years in which Labor Day occurs at a very late point, the latest possible point, and so it gives school districts more flexibility for those years to start only after September 1st. So we're really talking about that, the early part of September here. But in our school district, this issue has been on our lobbying agenda ever since I was on the school board, so for at least 12 years and maybe longer than that. Schools want to be able to make these decisions themselves, recognizing that there are certain economic interests in the state that would argue that it is in the interest of the state not to make this decision. Minnesota is a local control state. School districts are independent school districts with local school boards, and I truly believe that it is their responsibility to make this decision in terms of what is in the best interest of their communities, which in some cases might mean starting after Labor Day. In any community where the school district is doing its work, it's partnering effectively with its business interests and its business partners, and those considerations would be made. But I do not believe that it is appropriate for the legislature to dictate the starting date of the school year. I think schools should make that decision themselves. I could list a whole series of things around workshop dates and quarter and semester schedules and breaks and so forth, but I really don't think the details are really imperative for us to talk about, because each school district has a little bit different list of issues, why their schedule, you know, what drives their schedule and what's important to them. I would just ask that you simply see this as the right of each school district to make that decision for themselves. So with that, I have with me today Kurt Schneiderwin from the Minnesota School Board Association, Chair Mariani.
Thank you. Welcome, Mr. Schneiderwin, to the committee. Please state your name for the record. And
Mr. Chair, members, my name is Kirk Schneiderwin. I'm on staff of the Minnesota School Board Association. And with the sake of being redundant on this issue, I think this, for the School Board Association, is, at least this bill today, is a significant compromise on our behalf. Our members would very much prefer to go beyond these 2 years and allow school boards to have that authority to set the calendar date, working with their business community and their local districts. This bill focuses on 7 days from September 1st in 2009, there's a calendar provided as a handout, to September 1st in 2009 to September 1st in 2010. So you're talking about 7 school days for school districts. And this is a piece that I've had calls from superintendents in Hibbing, from Rockford to Albert Lea, trying to find some flexibility in this. And so this bill, in our opinion, doesn't go far enough. We have students that, this piece isn't important, but we have students that participate in state high school league activities. We have 80,000 high school students beginning in the middle of August who will be attending school. So 80,000 high school students participating in cross country, football, swimming, soccer, all those events. So many of those kids' school activities have already begun. This bill also does not prevent school districts from starting after Labor Day. And so they still have that freedom, still have that flexibility in making that choice, but they can start no earlier than September 1st. So this is something that we feel is very important, a significant compromise for our association. Our delegate assembly has supported a complete repeal of this, and this, as I've shared with you before, is something that we would hope that the membership and the committees would certainly support this year for school districts.
Thank you, Mr. Schneiderwin. Any questions for Mr. Schneiderwin? Mr. Schneiderwin, I'm actually very empathetic to this issue, and it seems to me that particularly as it applies to the years 2009-2010, and my understanding is because of the unique nature of the calendar there, I'm terribly concerned with the amount of time that students have, access to our schools. There's a lot of research that exists that talks about the incredible gap that exists in the summertime for many students because we're stuck on a rhythm of our school calendar tied to a society that no longer exists. We're in a high knowledge, high-tech society that has its own rhythms, and in which knowledge exponentially is transmitted and grows across the globe at high rates. And there's tremendous research that shows that the close to 3 months time off is a major contributor to what we commonly refer to as the achievement gap issue. But even regardless of income and status, that many school classroom teachers have shared with us the realities of spending a lot of time in those first weeks, and that's just doing remedial work. And so it seems to me that any policy that encourages more time in school and shortens that period of time in the summer is generally a pretty good thing for us to do. And so I am a little frustrated with sort of our hesitation to, at least purely from an education perspective. There are certainly other perspectives here, but the purview of this committee is to focus on education issues. I'm a little frustrated that we have not increasingly focused on the ability to create more school time for students in regards to this issue. Can you tell us, and maybe you said this, I wasn't paying close attention, I apologize. Is there precedent for this this issue of doing a one-time adjustment in regards to this issue relative to the uniqueness of a calendar year? Perhaps Representative Biden, either one can comment.
Mr. Chair, Kirk Steinwin, School Boards Association. This was an issue that 3 years ago where we had a complete repeal of this, restoration of the mandate for starting after Labor Day. Up until that time, there was an agreement between the school districts and some of the resort association that September 1st would be the compromise date for school districts as well as meeting the needs. So this is a piece that would essentially go back for at least a two-year time frame to go to the September 1st deadline, or the start date, I would say.
Well, President exists here in this regard. Any further questions for Mr. Spangler? If not, oh, I'm sorry, Representative Dietrich.
Yes, thank you, Mr. Chairman. When looking at the September 2009 calendar, you answered partially my question, is that you've got the precedent you're working with and the agreement that you had a couple of years ago. But as I look at that calendar, I don't understand why we wouldn't go with August 31st so that the schools could start on a Monday. And then at least when I was on the school board, I always pushed for having the 4th off so that if families wanted to take a long weekend. But when you're already starting on a Tuesday, they come for 3 days, 2 days. Mm-hmm. It's really a very fragmented week. And I would say the same in 2010. If you said the 30th, then you could get the kids in school on the front end of the week and allow them family leisure time, vacations, up north time, one last hurrah for a larger span of time.
Representative Brenner.
Chairman Ayani, Representative Dietrich. It, certainly you could make an argument to that. This is just made in the context of what past practice was with the September 1st target. You could make an argument for no designated starting date at all, I think, in terms of the district's right to honor the needs of their own community. The three-day weekend certainly still exists in some districts. Even with the early start, many districts don't have school on that Friday preceding the Labor Day weekend, and that is still is an option for them in the way they structure their schedule.
Mr. Chairman.
Representative Easter.
And so that's why I would suggest changing the date myself. You're going to go to, you're going to go to another committee, and that would be my recommendation from an academic standpoint. Is that at least then you've got a little more continuity in that week that people are going to already be trying to chop up.
Representative Dietrich, I would certainly accept an amendment if you'd like to propose it. I'm not certain that that amendment would have any impact whatsoever on the hearing this will get in another committee, but we'll see.
Representative Dietrich.
Okay, I will call on Ms. Larson and ask her to amend the bill.
Okay. Ms. Larson? Yes, you may have a minute. Why don't we take some testimony while we work that out for the testimony? You might want to hang around, Mr. Snyder, when, but, well, actually, you're probably going to anyway because the Senator Benson has a similar, somewhat related provision. We do have individuals who have asked to testify. Kevin Matzek, Joel Carlson, Mark Novotny.
Prepared
a speech ball. Thank you. Looks like a fun group, folks. Welcome to the committee. Who's going to start here?
I'll start, Mr. Chairman. Thank you. My name is Joel Carlson. I own a legal research and government affairs business here in St. Paul, and I'm here on behalf of a group
called... Mr. Carlson, actually, just to pull that mic over, you may not be picked up here on the tape.
Mr. Chairman, I represent a group and have for a long, long time called the Congress of Minnesota Resorts, and these are the small resort operations in Minnesota, and we used to boast over 3,000 resorts in Minnesota. We're down to just a little over 900. And we probably have a message for you today that you're that'll throw you a little curve. I want you to know that we support quality education. We think it's a top priority for the state. It's not the top priority for the state. And this is not a debate about resort economics and education. We would like you to focus on the issue of improved learning outcomes. There are competing interests in this state, and we recognize that. But we have never been convinced that changing the school calendar has any direct relation to improved learning outcomes. And as you look at this issue, which, by the way, when we get to Representative Benson's bill, the history on this, if you look at the repealer, goes back to 1959. This is a perennial issue here at the Capitol, and I've worked on it many times myself.
I was 2 years old at the time. I remember it well.
I wasn't born yet.
I just might add, I was not 2 years old. I was in high school, and I really wanted that repeal back then.
Mr. Carlson.
Anyway, Mr. Chairman and members, we'd just like you to look at the things that you can do to improve learning outcomes before you have to impact the post-Labor Day school start time, whether it's longer time on task during the school day, a longer school year, adding days to the school calendar. I'm not immune to the educational issue. I represent a school district, and I've talked with my school district about this issue. And, you know, they believe they can add days into their existing calendar right now without impacting the post-Labor Day school start time. They just have, you know, that just hasn't been a conflict for us. Now, I don't want to make stand at me, I believe. I'm choking on my comment there, Mr. Chairman. So anyway, with that, I have Mark Novotny here, who's the legislative chairman of the CMR, and I know he'd like to say a few words. And we have Hospitality Minnesota here, for Minnesota Tourism, and the State Fair would all like to weigh in briefly. I think our comments would be about the same when Representative Benson's bill comes up. We can duplicate it if you want, but I think we probably would weigh in about the same on both bills.
Thank you, Mr. Carlson. It would be my desire not to have testimony duplicated, so please extend the invitation for you to make your comments now. Mr. Novotny, I believe you're next.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman and members of the committee. My wife and I own Hideaway Bay Resort on Birch Lake near Hackensack, Minnesota. I drove down this morning through the snow, so I appreciate your time. As a resorter and as having a father of kids, I know the importance of education. I also know that in our school system today, the average district has 180 or 170 school days. Within that, they have a 377 minutes of instructional time. That's 6 hours and 17 minutes. If we look at that and say we can extend that a half an hour, you're going to add 14 days of instructional time during the school year without affecting the school calendar. So I would oppose the amendments that have been brought forth toward you.
Thank you, Mr. Novotny. And this Mr. Mathick?
Thank you, Mr.
Chairman. Welcome to the committee.
Thank you. For the record, my name is Kevin Mathick. I'm the Director of Government Affairs for Hospitality Minnesota. And I represent, our organization represents over 2,400 resorts, hotels, motels, beds and breakfasts, restaurants, and their suppliers. And I guess from the hospitality and tourism perspective, I'd like to echo a little bit of what Mr. Carlson said. But, you know, the tourism industry in Minnesota, we have, we employ over 244,000 we have over 244,000 employees and more than $3.7 billion in wages. And those employees of the future are being educated right now in the in our schools. And we fully support the work of this committee and the legislature in and our schools in educating the future workforce. We deeply value education. And like Mr. Carlson said, this is, in our view, this is not a need to be an argument between education and industry. We think we believe it's important to improve the quality time on task for the students. We do believe that there needs to be, like I said, we support the work of the committee on education, educating our future students, and so with that, I'll turn it over to Mr. Bagnoli.
Thank you, Mr. Mathick. Who's left?
Mr. Chair, Joe Bagnoli, on behalf of the State Fair. I didn't get my name in, unfortunately.
Quite all right. We're from the committee.
Joe Bagnoli. I'm an attorney with McGranche Law Firm, appearing on behalf of the State Fair today, and. As many of you know, and I'm sure everyone here has either been to or is certainly aware of the State Fair. It's an interesting organization in that it's older than the state. It's over 150 years old, and it's a metropolitan-based, geographically based organization. However, it's a organization that's completely dominated by rural by rural folks. The way the State Fair is organized is there are two representatives from each county to the State Fair, so there's 176 members of the State Fair Board. The folks that are the most active, as you might imagine, are the folks from the rural counties. And folks would think that we would be here objecting to this on the basis of the economic impact of the State Fair, and certainly there is an economic impact to the State Fair. I was going to, Mr. Carlson was good enough to bring this. I was going to bring Sweet Martha's Cookies. My neighbor actually is the person who runs Sweet Martha's Cookies, and I couldn't quite organize it in the last couple of evenings.
Well, I'll accept them next week.
Okay. I'll see what I can do. And the economic impact, I guess I'm saying, is important. There's an enormous number of, frankly, local folks that, are vendors at the State Fair, but the real important place that was impressed upon me deeply, I came in I was hired by the State Fair thinking that their main concern was going to be economic impact. Their main concern is most of these folks grew up raising, I'm a metropolitan based, I live in St. Paul, raising sheep, goats, cattle, livestock. Almost all of them went through the 4-H or Future Farmers of America programs where they learned about their animals, learned about showing animals, all the educational components that Future Farmers and 4-H contain. I've had it explained to me. I can't regurgitate it as well as I would like right now. But the culmination of that process is the county fairs and the state fairs. And that's the sort of culmination of it. And what they do is the kids come to the state fair, stay in dorms for the time that they're at the state fair. And I had a man from Waccawal County as a board member who described how his 14-year-old had won the Waccawal County best goat or whatever it was. And at the time, it had been changed to September 1st, and the family wanted to support, say, you know, we're not going to take you out of school. They were really torn because the kid had basically, the 4-H was going to pay for his way to the state fair, which for a 14-year-old is, from Waccawal County, it's not perhaps for a 14-year-old for St. Paul, is a huge deal in their life and a huge deal for their family. Instead of taking him out of school for the day or for the week, they took him out of school for that day. They drove three and a half hours in, showed the sheep for an hour and a half, 3.5 hours back out. And I guess I would just submit from their perspective, from the folks on the state fair's perspective, for the incremental flexibility that's afforded to school districts in this case, when City of St. Paul or the St. Paul School District has never started before Labor Day. There's many school districts that have never started before Labor Day. It seems to be a denigration of a tradition and a heritage and an educational process that occurs outside of the school district, outside of schools, albeit, but nevertheless important. And they asked me to just come here and share that and just to think about that little incremental change, albeit helping school districts incrementally provide some flexibility. Somehow many school districts around the state haven't needed that flexibility for 150 years, although it's gone back and forth over the years, that you would consider that and ask you to not support this legislation. Thank you
Mr. McNally. Some folks might argue, however, that as societies change, we need to ask ourselves, who ought to be making the adjustments. And perhaps the state fair ought to happen in the middle of summer so that it adjusts itself to the educational, considerations of our state. I mean, that's a legitimate alternative proposal as well. Ms. Colleen Tolleson from McFlory, Minnesota.
I'm Colleen Tolleson with Explore Minnesota Tourism, and I'm here on behalf of the Explore Minnesota Tourism Council, which is a council of 28 people appointed by the governor to represent tourism throughout the state. So the council includes convention and visitor bureaus, chambers of commerce, all areas of the lodging industry, transportation, travel, tour operators, etc. The council also includes four legislators, Representatives Ward and Representative Simpson from the House, and Senators Olson and Koch from the Senate. And one of the things that the council has really focused on since it started, which is about 4 years ago, is public policy relative to tourism. And so they have a public policy task force chaired by Lisa Paxton from the Brainerd Chamber of Commerce. And at their December 2007 meeting, they passed a resolution relative to the school year, which I think all of you have a copy of, but for the record, I'd just like to read it. And what it says is, whereas Minnesota claims one of the highest levels of K-12 learning in the country, whereas increasing classroom time does not have to compete with the Minnesota tourism industry, whereas learning benefits and outcomes are important to the tourism industry, whereas school calendars have an impact on both family vacation options and seasonal employment, therefore, the Explore Minnesota Tourism Council supports quality education as a high priority for the state, a school calendar that addresses the best learning outcomes available while preserving Minnesota's heritage this summer, including preserving a post-Labor Day school start, and investigating other tools to increase learning outcomes before changing the start date or increasing the number of educational days in the school year. I'll just add one other statistic relative to the things that have been passed out here is that the tourism industry contributes about $650 million each year in sales tax revenue to the state, which I think we all have different needs for that, but it is a contribution. And we think that, although it may be certain sectors of the industry that are here and testifying today that really it impacts all sectors of the tourism industry, and we just like to work together on a mutually beneficial solution.
Thank you, Ms. Powell. Any questions? What was that, Daphne?
Thank you, Chair. I apologize. I was out of the room briefly. What's the status of the Dietrich Amendment?
We're about to circle back to that.
So it has not been forwarded at this time. All right. Yeah. Thank you. just to comment and reflecting a bit on your comments of earlier, additionally, one of Mr. Carlson's members came to my office the other day, was good enough to drop off a couple of beach balls for the kids, and just get back to home.
I'm holding out for the cookies myself.
Sitting on Commerce as well as Education, along with Representative Tilbury, we got sunglasses and beach balls. It was a good day, and we reviewed all under $5 in value, so we're good. We're good,
Mr. Chairman.
Very good.
Could I inquire whether or not Representative Tilbury and Dabney's gifts exceeds $100?
We're good. We're good. The review has already been done. For the record, I think we're good. Representative
And the Mr. Coffey's member and I got into the discussion on this issue. And he made Mr. Bagnoli's argument about 4-H, and I pointed out there weren't a whole lot of cows, sheep, or goats in my district. Chickens, yes, but that wasn't, I think, a compelling argument to me. But what it caused me to pause and reflect on is I think what was embedded in your earlier comments, that we traditionally talk about still basing our school calendar on an agricultural model.
Mm-hmm.
And it caused me to reflect that that's actually not true. In Minnesota, we now have a school calendar based on a tourism model. Mm-hmm. Because it's the tourism industry that comes forward and says, you shouldn't be allowed to start before Labor Day. It's not the agricultural needs of the state any longer. And this may really be a reflection on the change in the state's economy from one based on commodities and manufacturing to a service-dominated economy. I didn't find his arguments compelling. What I do find compelling is that if the school in Lacapaul County has a bunch of kids involved in 4-H, perhaps they shouldn't start until the state fair is done. I think for the reasons you stated earlier on the summer learning gap, my school district should start before Labor Day, or at least should have the option to start before Labor Day, and let the school districts in the state make the decision. I asked the gentleman if he thought if we wanted to avoid a conflict between schools and resorts, if we shouldn't instead simply pass statute that prohibited resorts from opening until school is closed. He didn't find that to be a satisfactory proposal. And I don't blame him, but I think what's good for the ewe is good for the lamb. Mr. Bagnoli?
Mr. Chair.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Mr. Bagnoli.
Thank you. Mr. Chair, Representative Dabney, I think earlier I said I was from St. Paul. Like you, I have a very limited relationship with livestock.
We have that on the record. Thank you.
Animal husbandry is not as fortunate.
On the other hand, I grew up on a farm in 4-H, and FFA was very important to us. And so you have to look at the rural areas, not only the cities. Your comment earlier about having the state fair start earlier, that's almost impossible because the crops aren't in. There's vegetables, there's wheat, there's corn. Those aren't even available yet for the state fair, so that's why it has to start so late. Thank you.
Thank you. We have three questions, and I want to move on to the Dietrich Amendment, which I think is coming. And Representative Detmer, Representative Peterson. Oh, two questions. Representative Detmer.
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Chairman. And yes, I am one of those that grew up at a dairy farm, and through 4-H and FFA activities, as a big part of our family in the dairy farm. And as an educator for 34 years, I always felt it was better to start after Labor Day
you did have kids coming in for a couple of days and then break and then come back. Because as an educator, I liked starting after Labor Day, and I liked the idea of maybe allowing those school districts to set their calendar for their people that they have in their communities. I think it's important to take in consideration the state fair and the farming and the tourism. So the other school district is different.
Well, Representative Peterson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And since I carried a bill last year that would have allowed or provided some incentives to provide sites to be able to, in the elementary particularly, to go all year with their schools, it seems to me that we do need to look at some change. And maybe the issue of the extended year goes to elementary more than the secondary, because I'm not sure. But as I understand it, there's no concern about extending the school year. It's just the starting of the school year, and I have to ask that question and follow up.
Mr. Carlson.
Mr. Chairman and members, there is a very limited season in Minnesota for seasonal resort businesses. And I had a conversation with President Benson about this morning. The time you want to be there is July and August, and this consistent and uniform start of the school year allows everyone to take advantage of our tradition of summer in Minnesota. Early June, not so much. But when you get to the latter part of July and August, that is when resorts are full in Minnesota. So does it have an impact on us? Absolutely. If you tell me that the only thing we can do to improve education in Minnesota is to start school before Labor Day, we're there. Let's do it. But we know that there are a lot of things that you can do that don't have negative impacts on the fair, on resorts, on tourism, on the other parts of our economy. And we've learned when it wasn't post-Labor Day that if it's not a consistent start statewide, that people don't know what it is. And so the bookings drop. People don't come because they haven't, when does my school start? Now I look at it when it's going to start. I see the calendars coming out now. But not a lot of people do that. And so unless it's a uniform statewide consistent policy, it's very difficult for families to make that plan. And so we think it's worked well for the state as a whole to have a consistent start date on post-Labor Day.
Okay, Mr. Chair, I'd like to follow up. Districts now don't have any absolute number of days, and that varies all over as to the number of days that they have school. But it's also, research shows that it particularly, I think with elementary students, and that's probably true with high school students too, that huge gap in the summer does make a difference in the learning. And that if we have an alternate type of school year where there are vacations, maybe 3 weeks on, six weeks on, 3 weeks off, et cetera, where the students get a continuity of learning, the achievement gap does narrow, and it does make a difference. And so I'm trying to say, I guess, that I would hope that people would start, or districts maybe would start looking, and maybe this legislature too, at how we try to accommodate tourism and some alternate types of school calendars that would accommodate learning for those most needy students in particular, and maybe all students around the state.
Representative Swales.
Thank you, Pam Mariani. All I would like to make is a comment, and it's the way you either look at vacation at the front end of summer or the back end of summer. We're still required to have the same number of days in school year. And by having these very late labor days in 2009 and 2010, we're also going to have a very late school year in June. And the only argument that I'm hearing right now to preserve this is really, if it really, we're talking about the number of days, is the relationship to the state fair. And so I am a big fan of the state fair. I love going there. But I think that for school districts that are more urban and they would like to have their school start
earlier, I think what Representative Reinert is advocating here is that it's local control, that we let the various school districts have a say when they feel it's most appropriate for their school to be in session or not in session. And so I will continue to go to the state fair, and I will continue to go to resorts up north. And as a teacher in the public schools, I'm just more creative about when I get to go to those resorts. And I will continue to do so because I believe that that's an important part of our culture.
Members, I'm going to move us along here. I want to thank the testifiers from the tourism and hospitality community. You do find work an important part of our society and our economic base in Minnesota. And I want to thank you for taking the time, especially you, Mr. Devante, driving down through the snow this morning to be here with us. This issue, I suspect, is not an issue, regardless of what happens today or in subsequent committees. It's going to go away. I mean, as you know, our state consistently struggles with this, and I suspect over time there may be a solution to this that is not presently before us, and perhaps it is year-round schooling. We know we have school districts that are experimenting with that with very good outcomes. We've heard that testimony in this committee last year. There may be some other solutions as well, but let's continue to struggle and work together on this issue. Representative Dietrich.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I would ask Ms. Larson to read the amendment.
Ms. Larson.
Mr. Chairman, Representative Dietrich, members, on the House File 3262, page 1, line 6, delete September 1 in 2009, page 1, line 7, delete and 2010, and insert August 31st in the 2009-2010 school year and on or after August 30th in the 2010-2011 school year.
Mr. Chairman, I'd like to move that amendment as read by Ms. Larson.
Representative Dietrich moved the amendment that was signed the record and was read by Ms. Larson. Any discussion? If not, members, all in favor of the motion, please say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, same sign.
Aye.
Motion prevails. Representative Steiner.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I believe committee members have done a good job of making the case from a variety of angles. I have no desire to compete with Lakes or the State Fair or 4-H. These are all wonderful parts of the culture of Minnesota. And it's precisely because I'm sensitive to the nature of that discussion as a school board member. I have engaged in it for many, many years. I want to be respectful of those interests, but I certainly could produce superintendents and principals and educators who would argue aggressively that there are improved educational outcomes to be had by changes in calendar. Not this modest change that we are proposing in our bill, but more flexibility in calendars. And several of you have raised those issues, and I do think this committee probably in the long run may need to engage those for the well-being of our students. Particularly the question of the achievement gap, I think, could be tied to calendar issues. But this proposal is intended to be simply about local control and the rights of school boards to make that decision for themselves.
Thank you. If there are no further comments, then the motion renews, the chair renews the motion that House File 3252 as amended be recommended to pass and referred to the Committee on Higher Education and Workforce Development. All in favor of that?
Mr. Chairman,
yes.
Could you read how this bill is going to be read?
Pardon?
Could you read how the bill will be read then?
Oh. Let me ask staff to assist okay. with that. Thank you, Representative Zedner.
Mr. Chairman, members, the language would read in its entirety, notwithstanding Minnesota Statute, Section 128.40, Paragraph A, a district may commence an elementary or secondary school year on or after August 31st in the 2009-2010 school year, and on or after August 30th in the 2010-2011 school year.
Thank you.
Okay. So Ruth, and any everyone's clear on what's before us then? So all in favor of the motion, please say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, same sign.
Aye.
Motion prevails. Let me, Representative Reiner, thank you. You know, it's a very difficult issue, and for a while we actually weren't really debating your bill. We were talking kind of about the big issue in terms of a permanent solution. You have brought forward something that deals specifically with those 2 years because of the unique nature of the calendar in those years, and so I appreciate your diligence in crafting something carefully, and I wish you Godspeed to Representative Rukavina's committee, and I will join you in lobbying our good friend, Representative Rukavina. Members, let's fill up. It's our last bill, it's House File 3181. Representative Benson and Representative Benson moved at House File. House File 3181 be recommended to pass, and Representative Benson, I believe this is going to Government Ops. Is that correct?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman and members of the committee. May we hold off on that decision until we finish discussing the bill?
We just need a motion before us, okay, so that the bill is before us, and we can make the correct motion later on. So
thank you.
Why don't we just leave it at this point? How Representative Benson moves the House File 3181 be recommended to pass.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Before we begin, I would like to make a oral amendment, if I may.
Yes, you may.
On page 3, line 312. I would like the date 2008 struck and replaced with 2009.
Members, Representative Benson moves a oral amendment that on line 3.12, the date 2008 be struck and replaced with the date 2009. And this will put the bill in the shape that the author wishes it to be before us. All in favor of that motion, say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, same sign. Motion prevails.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I'm going to try to ingratiate myself with members of the committee by seeing to it that we end our discussion of this bill and get it passed by 3 o'clock, the deadline, if we're able. First of all, what we have here is a modest bill, but it has the potential for doing wonderful things. One of them is to save the Republic from one of the curses of all government, which is the growth of overweening bureaucracy, paperwork, which, as we all know, killed the Soviet system, for example. A great German sociologist by the name of Max Weber wrote about this back in the latter part of the 19th century. So I'm here to carry on his work today in that regard. Also,
Benson, it's always a good day when we're serving the Republic.
Also, I'm anxious to help save our state budget. And I've been looking for ways to assist in that regard, and I do have a modest proposal in this bill, because if the committee agrees to pass it, we will be able to get rid of some red tape which affects and impinges upon the activities of our local school boards, who are constantly being given new mandates, usually, as far as I can tell, without funding, to send off reports and papers and other kinds of communication to the State Board of Education and other areas of the state government, and then they disappear into some black bureaucratic hole, never to be seen or heard of again. And all that costs money. So, Mr. Chairman, those are two of my objectives, and I have a third one, which is I introduced a bill similar to this last year, parts of which passed, and I thought I was doing a wonderful job striking a blow against bureaucracy and paperwork. The Minnesota Chamber of Commerce
demurred on that and listed me as one of those persons who is really making it difficult for our government to proceed. So with that brief introduction, this mandate reduction bill that I'm proposing does a number of things. It repeals the superintendent's report, which, as far as I can tell, very few people read, and which requires school districts to make guesses about how much it's going to cost to get children to a 90% pass rate. And there are a lot better ways to determine this. The PS Minnesota proposal, for example, will deal with this. And I have two speakers here today, Scott Kronquist and Brad Lindahl, and Alan Hoffman, who will discuss each of these. The second one has to do with primary elections. I would like to keep that in the bill, but I have been told that Chairman Pulaski's government operations omnibus bill has almost the exact, if not the exact, language. But just in case some unpleasant thing happens to it on the way, I would like to leave it in my bill here. Also, this bill deals with a number of other issues, including the Labor Day repeal, which is the most controversial part. And this is the item that I would like to reserve a right, with the indulgence of the chairman, to possibly delete after we've had a thorough discussion, however. And also, with the indulgence of the chairman, I'm hopeful that even at this late date, I might be able to introduce a separate bill dealing specifically with this single issue. And with that brief introduction, I would like to introduce, which of you want to go first? I'd like to introduce Representative Hoffman from the Wayzata School District. Thank you.
Mr. Hoffman, welcome, a fellow Macite. It's always good to find two Macites in the same room. So.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. There was a third a moment ago when my daughter was in the room.
She
works up on the sixth floor.
Even better.
She also went to McAllen. Mr. Chair, members of the committee, I'm Alan Hopeman. I'm the business manager at Wayzata Public Schools. And I'm here today representing MASBO, the Minnesota Association of School Business Officials. I'm here to speak specifically about Sections 1 and Section 4 of this bill, which we endorse and which we do think will introduce some streamlining and also eliminate a redundant or a report that is of little value, I think, to the public in Minnesota. Let me first begin with some editorial comments. So I've been in this school finance business in Minnesota for about 30 years. It was complex when I started, but the complexity grows every year, and I am concerned about that, and MASBO as a membership, as an organization, is concerned about that. We see this growing complexity. The accounting and reporting requirements grow every year, and seldom is anything taken away. We now have, in UFARS, we are required to calculate some 29 special reserve accounts at year-end, each requiring special computation, special calculations, slowing down the process. The statutes, the blue books behind you there, now run, the education code runs to about 550 pages. There's just too much information for people to process, for people to understand, and to perform the job of business manager in a school district efficiently. And it's one can't focus on efficiency when one's busy counting beans. You can't take a look at the big picture and think about how can we save some money in this district? How can we target more resources at the classroom when you don't have time to do that?
Mr. Hoffman, I'm going to interrupt you, and I apologize. We're getting a little bit of feedback, so if you can, anyone who has a cell phone or PDA, if you can do what I'm about to do, which is to shut it off, that would greatly help. There's some interference, and that will affect the quality of us being able to record this. So, thank you. Mr. Hoffman, please continue.
And Mr. Chair, to conclude my editorial comment, I think the worst is that each year some school district somewhere gets in trouble. Somebody gets in trouble because people misunderstood the accounting requirements, they misunderstood the revenue flow, and because of the complexity of the system, bad things happen, and that's not good for kids, and it's not good for educators when that happens. Interesting that Maslow's simplicity platform alone runs to 4 pages. The proposals that we have for simplifying the system. There's a lot of work to be done here, and I really applaud Representative Benson's efforts and the Maslow organization supports those efforts, and applaud your efforts as a committee. Moving on to the specific provisions in the bill, in Section 1, there's a report that's called the Superintendent's Report, and it must be submitted every year to the Department of Education. And in this report, we are supposed to estimate how many students will attain a certain passage rate on the Minnesota Comprehensive Assessment, and then we're supposed to estimate how much it would cost to get all students up to a higher portion of students up to that threshold. And it is completely subjective. There is no way that anyone can know what those percentages of attainment will be and how to raise those. Quantitatively to know how much money it would take and how you would accomplish that, how many kids you would raise with that. And there's no consistency from district to district. There is absolutely, everyone's doing a subjective report, and so there's no comparable data. I don't think it's of any use to anybody, and I've never gotten a question on it. I've done this report since it was enacted, I think 8 or 10 years ago. I've done it every year. Never gotten a question. I've never had anyone ask to see a copy of it. I don't think it's of any use, and I would really encourage that you keep Section 1 in the bill and move that forward through the process. I think it certainly would be beneficial to everyone, particularly those people who have to do that report. Moving on, Section 4 of the bill requires a report from the Department of Education on the department's data collection procedures. The Department of Education, there are a number of computerized systems that they use to collect data. There are, I think, 6 major systems now that we mentioned in our Maslow proposal. There's UFAR's, the Uniform Financial Accounting and Reporting System, that collects revenue and expenditure data. There's EDRS, Education Data Reporting System, which collects salary and pupil projection data. The STARS report, which collects data on licensed and unlicensed staff, including salaries again. There's the MARS, Minnesota Accounting Student Reporting Student System, which collects enrollment and demographic data. There's EMAP, which collects data for the No Child Left Behind consolidated application process. And now there's a new career and technical reporting system, which collects budget and expenditure data for a career and technical program. It's entirely possible that a teacher's salary could be reported in 3 different systems. It simply is duplicative, redundant effort. And we know the Department of Education is there are many good people there. They're reasonable people. We just would like to see this enacted and have them take a good hard look at this and see if there are ways that they can reduce the duplication and make this effort simpler for those of us in the field who have to do it. And hopefully it can make things simpler and easier for them to administer from their standpoint also. Mr. Benson,
thank you. Thank you, Mr. Holtman.
Mr. Van Gell, this might be a spot for you.
Thank you. Good afternoon, Mr. Lindell. Welcome to the committee.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, Brad Lundell, here today on behalf of the Minnesota Administrators of Special Education, and we're very, very strongly in support of Section 4, well, of all the bill, but especially Section 4. if any of you have talked to a special education administrator or teacher ever, you will know that paperwork is one of the things that's the biggest bugaboos in the special education field, and I think that it's one of the things now that's even
making it difficult to recruit teachers of special education and retain them in the area of special education in this, our school district. And it's we look at this as just something that really has to be done to streamline the system of data collection, find new ways to get the needed information to districts without the redundancy, to the state without the redundancy, to make it more certain as to the amounts of reimbursement and the amounts of services that are being provided for across students. I think one place that we're seeing it with especially difficult is in the area where you'll have a dual licensed teacher that's working with both EBD students and learning disabled students, for instance, and you're going to have try to apportion out the portion of salary in dealing with each of those that teacher's duties with each of those sets of students. It's extremely difficult, and I think anything we can do to make the system less complex would be very much welcomed, and we thank Representative Benson for coming forward with this bill, and we'll certainly support it all the way through, and hopefully the committee will look kindly upon it.
Thank you, Mr. Lundell.
Mr. Chairman, I'd like to ask Mr. Prinquist to kind of give an overview of the other sections, including this, possibly, of the bill as well.
Mr. Prinquist.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. My name is Scott Prinquist with the Association of Metropolitan School Districts, and I would like to address the two other sections of the bill. The first one relates to the school board primary election requirement. Up until a few years ago, the decision on whether or not to hold a primary election for school board elections resided with the local school board, just as it still does reside with local county boards and local city councils. We had a situation arise several years ago now where a school board admittedly made a bad choice and decided not to have a primary election when they really did have a number of candidates. And there was complaints from the local community because it was very difficult for them to try to sift through a large number of candidates on a general election ballot. But we would argue that we went too far in trying to correct that anecdotal situation, and then ended up adopting a law that mandated that school districts hold primary elections if there's even one more candidate than twice the number of openings. And this resulted in I'll just give you one example, and there's more, but a couple years ago, and Representative Peterson's familiar with this, a couple years ago in the Robbinsdale School District, we had a situation where there were four school board openings, and we had nine candidates, so one more than twice the number of openings. Well, under the law, they were required to hold a election, primary election. As you all know, these elections are expensive, and it falls upon the school district to bear those costs. Not only that, we have safety concerns, because as you also know, the primary areas where the polling places are located are in our schools, and so we need to bring in security, and we really need to take extraordinary measures to make sure the students and staff are going to be safe on those days when we have a high number of people coming into the schools. So we think that was a situation where we really, would not have been necessary to have a primary election to eliminate one person from a nine-person field. And in that case, as it turned out, after the filings closed and after the primary election had already been established, one of the candidates withdrew. So we ended up having a primary election for really no reason at all. So we would argue that we should go back to a place where we have local control there and allow the local school board to make that decision on whether or not a primary election is necessary, just as city councils and again, the county boards have the ability to do. The other section of the bill I'd like to address, Mr. Chairman, and I won't spend much time on this because I know you've already had a discussion about it, but it is the repeal of the Labor Day starting school before Labor Day. I did hand out a newsletter. This is a newsletter that we produced last summer, actually, and Mr. Chairman, I shared this with you previously. But we think that it does get to the need to have really a bigger discussion about this, and today's maybe not the day to do that. But previous testifiers talked about, well, you know, can't we just can't we make the school day longer? Aren't there other ways to attack this issue? Certainly there are other ways, and those all should be on the table as well. So
But the evidence does continue to mount that the summer learning gap does have significant impact on student achievement. And if you look at the research article, it's on page 2 of this newsletter, highlights research that was done by some researchers at Johns Hopkins University in a study of the students in the Baltimore School District. And it actually showed that two-thirds of the achievement gap there was directly attributable to the summer learning gap. And so we think it's an issue that bears much further discussion. In addition to being about local control, it is about student achievement. Minnesota, in fact, I believe this is accurate, Mr. Chairman, I know it was at least a few years ago, is the only state in the country that has a law that says you can't start school before Labor Day. I think that tells you something right there too about what other states have done about this. Another piece of information for you: many of you are familiar with Bill Morris of Decision Resources, who does extensive polling for local governmental units, including school districts. We have him in about once a year to share some of the results of his polling. He conducted a poll last summer. One of the questions on his poll was, should school districts be allowed to start school prior to Labor Day? 81% of the respondents said yes. So I think that's a pretty clear indication of where the general public stands on this issue. But again, I think Mr. Chairman, I think Representative Benson has an amendment that's going to make the discussion on this moot at this point anyway. But just some tidbits for you to think about if we move forward in the future to have a discussion on that topic.
Thank you, Mr. Kuhnquist. So it may be helpful in the interim for us perhaps to do a little investigating of, I suspect we're not the only state that has a tourism industry, and it would be helpful perhaps to see if there's any correlations, particularly for those states who may have shifted away, if they ever had, a mandate, prohibiting a pre-Labor Day start. But it might be helpful and instructive to see what the impact of tourism in those states may have been. I think there might be a fruitful exercise for us. I was not aware of the polling. That's very interesting information. Thank you, Mr. Kuhnquist.
Thank you.
Representative Benson.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. There are a number of items in this bill that we feel are very important, and as I mentioned before, I would like to have an opportunity to introduce a standalone bill having to do with the Labor Day issue. But because of I hope that we can move some of these other issues forward in order to avoid the netherworld of the Higher Education Committee and the multi-headed Hydra there, who will kill this bill in its entirety without mentioning the name. I would like to make an oral amendment if I can, which is to delete Section 5 of this bill at this time, if I may.
Representative Benson colorfully moved to amend House File 3181 by removing Section 5 from the bill. Any discussion? All in favor of that motion, please say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed, same sign. Motion prevails. Representative Benson.
So we're 4 minutes to go.
We do have a couple of questions here from Representative Peterson and Representative Hodge.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I just have a question about deleting the language about the annual expenditures on the basic skills test, and I'm concerned about any unintended consequences. Does this relate at all to the amount of money that a school district would then get in terms of either compensatory or NCLB monies? And are the monies that are given for those particular needs attached to this information that you're sending on to the Department of Education?
I think it was a prudent question, Representative Benson.
I see some heads nodding no, but maybe we could clarify.
Mr. Holtman.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, Alan Holtman again. No, there's no connection, and there would be no loss of federal or state revenue.
from this. It's simply a report to the Department of Education, and just estimates, really.
I believe the history I heard about this is that it was meant to perhaps serve as a guide for us here in terms of appropriations, but my understanding is there is no mechanical connection. Mr. Holtman just shared with us that, you know, triggers that, you know, by law. I think it was meant, my understanding is it was meant to be information that apparently in the past some members may have used to guide their decisions about what we do here in regards to appropriations. Representative Hush.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and I just feel obligated or responsible to also tell the side of the story from central Minnesota when it comes to the primary issue. We heard about Robbinsdale, but I do want to let the committee know about what brought upon this legislation. In St. Cloud, we had at least three school board openings, and I think 14 different candidates run. Due to the majority of the school board being able to determine who was up for re-election, being able to determine if there was a primary or not, they were able to essentially implement an incumbent protection plan. I don't see the repeal of this as being local control. I see it as an incumbent protection plan. When in St. Cloud, I think the highest vote getter either had 14% or 17% of the overall vote was able to be re-elected, brought about a lot of problems in our community and unfortunately set our school district back a number of years. I'm happy to say that we've been able to remedy that, and I think we made great strides in the school district, but it was a hard process to go through. And I think something like this is important, and in all honesty, I think it should also apply to cities and counties. And by saying because it doesn't apply to cities and counties, for me, isn't a valid argument. Maybe we should start looking at applying it to the other local units of government. When the people who are up for re-election are able to determine the platform for the re-election, we start going down a dangerous path. So I am not opposed to this bill in its entirety, but I am opposed because of sections 2 and 3. But I do admire the intentions of the author for wanting to deal with some of the mandates. But I felt responsible for letting the committee know about our side of the story.
Representative Hush, the little bit that I know about the history of that indeed was a very painful period of time for your community. It's quite unfortunate that we had arguably elected officials who were basically gaming the system. Your concern for your community, but also in terms of caution to the rest of the state, is duly noted. Representative Benson?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Before I conclude in 30 seconds to it.
I'm sorry, let me just go Representative Beecher Kiel, because it sounds like you're going to a closing here. Is that,
yeah.
Representative Beecher.
Yeah, thank you. Representative Haas and I have had conversations about this, and since he brought up the example that I have a lot of sympathy for, I would just like to bring up the other side of the coin also, because I have an interest in this. I have this bill, and actually it is the one in GovOps. And when I presented the bill, I had somebody come and testify who was in a three-way race for a school board position. And she testified that what she thought is that starting the election so early between three people really brought out partisan politics. And we have tried so hard in our school board elections to keep partisanship out of it, and that it is really about the kids. And so I just also wanted to make that one point. And the second point is that I don't think it was that election exactly, but we did some research on some of the other elections. And for example, in the Anoka-Hennepin School District, that an election can cost us $16,000. And, you know, that is a couple of paras or something like that. So I just want to say that there's probably not the perfect solution for every single school district in every single scenario, but with this law implemented in this particular position, it was ugly also, and I don't know. So anyhow, thank you.
Representative Benson.
Mr. Chairman, just wondered, now that we've eliminated Section 5 whether there is a designation as to where the bill goes next.
Representative Benson, I was just conferring with staff. There is arguably a rationale on why the bill would go to GovOps because of the elections provision. I was not aware that they apparently have this issue before them as well. We can certainly, I am told that I think it's probably more custom here that if we're looking to fold this bill into some kind of an omnibus bill down the line, that that it would not make it necessary for it to go to government operations. I think the issue here is whether or not you as the author wishes to run any kind of risk of not meeting any kind of deadlines, GovOps deadlines, I think are similar to our deadlines here.
Mm-hmm.
And so I leave it to you, but clearly you don't need to go to higher ed at this point. Well done. But it seems to me your options are either to have it referred to GovOps to look at the selectives issue. I would imagine my counsel would be that would be the conservative approach. Or move it to education finance for possible inclusion in a finance bill. I think there may, in fact, be some issues here, at least, you know, on the surface that might be raised in terms of the direction to the department to do this report on data collection that at least merits a look at fiscal impacts. And of course, your other option is to go straight to the floor, but then you're avoiding both the GovOps issue and the fiscal review issue. So,
Chairman, let's go with the conservative route. I've been accused of being a fiscally conservative Democrat, so that would fit.
So, Representative Benson removes or moves that House File 3181 as amended be recommended to pass and referred to the Committee on Government Operations. All in favor? And that's the conservative representative who made that motion, members. All in favor of the motion, please say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, same sign. Motion prevails. Thank you, Representative Benson.
Thank you,
Mr. Holton. Members, we will meet again on Tuesday. I really do expect that's going to be a long day for us. We'll most likely be in an evening meeting as well on Tuesday, so just so you make your plans accordingly. You know, we've been able to avoid evening meetings, and I think that at most maybe we might have one more than that. But I want to thank you so much for hanging around on Friday afternoon to deal with these bills. Until Tuesday, we're adjourned.